Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Royal Grown Radio here at CannaFest 2023, live in Eureka, California, Halverson Park, on the waterfront, redefining what cannabis events are in California. This is our first Humboldt County open consumption sanctioned event where we can consume cannabis in public. We're very thankful to be here. I'm Michael Beck.
I'm Rick Elliott.
And we're joined today by the man, the myth, the legend, the organizer of CannaFest, huge industry contributor for decades, Steve Geeter. Thank you for the wonderful event. And the legend of all legends in the cultivation world, Mr. Ed Rosenthal. And I could introduce him for days, but if you don't know who Ed is, you should just do a little research, because without him, virtually none of us would be here today. So big thanks to Ed, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we've only got a few minutes. We've all got so much going on. Ed's got books to sign. Everybody's trying to get in and meet Ed. Steve's running the whole ship here. We got panels. We
got a flight to catch.
Flights to catch. So we're just going to jump right in, and I'm going to kind of throw it around the table. Starting with you, Ed. In the 70s, when you started deep in this business, did you think we'd be here today, open, smoking cannabis in public in a waterfront park, celebrating the plant like this?
Well, actually, 4 years before that, I was in my apartment on the Lower East Side of New York, called the East Village, and there were a group of us sitting around on pillows and everything, smoking, and the subject came up, when will cannabis be legal? And somebody said 5 years. And then somebody said 10 years. And then somebody said, well, in 20 years, that will be in 1987, it will be legal. And the reason why for that is, by that time, look around, we're going to have executive positions, and we're going to be able to change society, and it will be legal. And if somebody had said that here in 2024, it still wouldn't be totally legal, and it would be illegal and still in some states, people would have said, oh no, that can't be. And so...
That's an interesting
But I have something else to say about it. My brother is 4.5 years older than I am. And he had graduated college in 1967. And he was married. He was living in an apartment with his wife, going to work every day. And that big cliff that happened where, like, psychedelics and cannabis and a different lifestyle were breaking out, that difference in ages or difference in positions at that moment, that we're still feeling that. And as an example, Biden is my brother's generation, not our generation. In a lot of ways, the people from 67 who, you know, got it in 67, and it was only maybe an eighth of the kids. But the people who got that, you know, they wouldn't feel uncomfortable here. But people from 5 years before, most people, they never got it. They were listening to the Kingston Trio and stuff like that, and, you know, some rock and roll, but they didn't get the British invasion. There's a whole bunch of things that they didn't get. They didn't get there's a new way of living. You know, they never got that.
Right.
And but that's why Biden is so, for instance, and Trump are so unsympathetic.
That's well said.
I was going to say, it's pretty funny that you mentioned 1987 specifically and the Lower East Side together, basically a sentence. Because that was my first introduction into cannabis legalization. I went to the protest in summer 1987. Actually, it was May in Washington Square Park. That was my first introduction in a big protest for cannabis, smoking right next to cops for the first time. And then, you know, that basically was the beginning of it for me. So it's really funny that you mentioned those two things together.
But people thought 20 years from 1967, it's going to be legal.
It would have been legal and it would have been easy. And
nobody realized that how, I don't know, how these forces changed the directory. I think if Gore had gotten the presidency, I think it would have been legal.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I think this is an important distinction because there were those events happening at the time. There was Hash Bash in Ann Arbor. There was this like uprising of events that happened. But people still were getting taken to jail on the periphery. It was still illegal. And whatever sense we had at that time, it was still illegal. And there were some moments of freedom. And there are places of freedom now here in California. You're able to put together this event and we're here and we're safe and it's okay. But, you know, 1,000 miles from now, they'd be dragging us all away in paddy wagons.
Well, wait a second. During Prohibition, there were 750,000 people a year arrested for cannabis. It was an equal opportunity oppressor, the laws. I mean, people talk about, you know, how minorities were disproportionately, but hippies as well. And you know, it created a police force of really sadistic people because they weren't doing good. They were ruining people's lives and they were getting pleasure out of it. And they reveled in it. They reveled in fucking people up. And it brought out the worst in the police, and we're still suffering from that.
I think you're right, and I think it allowed somehow for those people to classify cannabis users as other, as not the same. They're not a part of us. They're not a part of this society and this group, and so that they could feel comfortable with that oppression. And that, I think, is what needs to change, and it's starting to change. I mean, I guess it's been changing for 40 years, but we've still got a long way to go.
Here in Humboldt, I have one. It was an interesting situation because the police knew that cannabis was not a problem. They knew that it was not a problem. People weren't getting into brawls and knife fights and gun fights over cannabis. It just wasn't happening.
Right.
Here was this large amount of money changing hands. And they were jealous and they were sadistic. And, you know, the police from that era, I think that it's time to put some of them on trial for some of the ways that they abused society. They shouldn't get the pensions they should be getting is free room and board.
Yeah. It's definitely created a prison culture in the United States over the last 50 years. You know, being able to check everybody into some sort of incarceration for cannabis, it really was just a huge pathway to getting people locked into that.
I wonder, you know, how the influence changed as what Ed was talking about, this cultural energy thought, within 20 years, cannabis will be smooth and everything, but business and economics, it seems like, implanted itself into where the future of cannabis will go and politics thereafter. Or at the same time, because the business in the U.S. here and the politics seem to be the same knife or sword, if you will, whatever, just carving out different ways to go, you know? And together it has this big impact, and that's how we're able to do this thing, is by now that we have cannabis businesses and all these actual businesses that are legally allowed to be proud of what they represent and do, we have some momentum, and that's what this is representative of. Not that it wasn't happening. Like, a few people came up to me here, and I took it as one of the biggest honors and said, this really reminds me of Seattle Hemp Fest. They were describing the vibe here and how it's on the water and just the energy, the community aspects of it and stuff. And these things rise up and fade away with different pushes or different leaders and stuff like that in the industry. But at this point, now in the culture, cultural leaders, but at this point now we have business leaders also mixed in with our cultural leaders that are all a part of the same parade, if you will.
Well, yeah. And that's really interesting because I feel like it's the oppression that forced the unification of the culture to include the entire top-down dynamic and to rise together, right? And we had to see people make that leap into authentic success in the cannabis world and to be able to document, no, hey, we are contributing to the community. We are a tax base. We are a legitimate business and contributor to society, but it also took the underground, the have-nots who are out there smoking, rising up in quantity and mass to be like, fuck you, please stop arresting us.
Right.
But it had to come from both sides to kind of hone that edge of the sword, as you would say.
It's forging the gaps, building the bridges, if you will. Like when we did this event, we still had to work with the local police to convince them that what we were going to do was okay based on the laws and all this. And after day one, you know, we got a big handshake and a big smile from the chief. Happily, that there were no incidents at our event at all.
Yes.
There were no one that got hurt from someone else. Maybe someone tripped or something, but really, no, there were zero incidents. No one was violent. No one got into a fight. And we had 2,500 some people here together.
And I think
Wait a second. First of all, I don't think the cops should be involved in it at all. And it's none of the cops' business. That's the first thing.
Right.
And the second thing is, how about Woodstock? That was only, what, 40 years ago or something? Yeah, where, you know, there were hundreds of thousands of people there under duress conditions, sort of like what just happened at Burning Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was one birth.
Yeah.
No death.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was no violence.
Yeah.
So the cops don't really have to learn it over and over again.
Right.
And in fact, maybe the cops should learn a little bit about nonviolence. They should be forced to go to these events in civilian clothing as civilians and learn how to be nonviolent.
I agree.
That's very well said.
You know?
Peace officers, exactly.
No, not as peace officers, as civilians. They are not equipped to be peace officers. They're violence officers. Never think of cops as peace officers. They're just not. The reason is that if you're called to enforce laws that you don't really like, you're not going to be a cop, right? So it gets the weirdest, the weird laws get only the strangest people into it. The bullies, the sadists, the people who have no authority in life and would like some authority over somebody. Yeah, I mean, I think if you gave cops PTSD tests, we wouldn't have a police force.
Right.
Yeah, I think there should be much more, you know, personality screening and things like that to create a true peace force. It's a top-down change that we have to change the perspective at the top of the pyramid.
It's not top-down. It's the whole mess. It's the top, it's the bottom, it's the center. And they say, oh, it's only a few cops. You know, how can a person hold somebody down and choke them to death for 9 minutes?
Yeah, that's a sick person.
But yeah, there needs to be, you know, barriers.
I mean, didn't he show signs before?
Clearly.
He did it, actually. And nobody did, he's a great cop. We'll send him out on a training mission. He'll show him how to do it.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's, again, the beauty of this event. I think that's where we come together and we embody the change and we interact with the other people of the same mindset to continue to spread that love. And that's, you know, what I'm so appreciative of. And last night, like you were saying, there were no issues. There was a sense of peace. The music was incredible. And we just really are thankful for the opportunity to come and for the hard work you guys put in and that you put in to bring us all here. If I hadn't read the Ask Ed columns and found the original Ed Rosenthal grow book in my dad's closet when I was 13 years old, like, I would not be the person I am today. I wouldn't be exposed to cannabis, to the culture, to the plant, and to have that connection that I think the plant brings to us all. And, you know, maybe that's the new thing, is like, they all need to smoke a joint before they can even enter training. But, you know, I know we all are on a limited time schedule, so I want to say thank you to everyone for tuning in. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
For bringing us all here together. Yeah, I'm Michael Beck.
I'm Rick Elliott.
And you're listening to Royal Grown Radio.
Peace.
Bye.